Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Like, you know bad things can happen, but you don't think about that. Like, you think about all the good things, and you think about all the blessings and the just, like, the purpose of life. Like, that's the purpose of life, is having kids and watching them grow and going, like, there's always hard things, going through the hard things, but until you're in your own trial and there's no way out, like, you don't have an option, that's kind of when you have, at least for me, that was when I had my heart to heart with my Savior, of like, look, I'm here, I want to be here fully. You told me it was going to be okay, so I will do everything I can on my end to make that happen.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts, and we are so excited. We are joined by Ashley and Mark Allen. Mark and Ashley, like many of our guests, have a tragically beautiful story. Tragic turned beautiful, right? If I can say that. We're just going to turn it over to you guys. You can introduce yourselves, tell everybody a little bit about you, how you fell in love. Was it love at first sight, or did it take a little... Yeah, that's a good reaction. For those
of you that... something like that.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, tell everybody a little bit about yourselves.
So we were in Utah when we met. We were like forcefully introduced. I had a friend who was taking a class with him while he was going to college. And so she tried to introduce us, and we were both like, no thanks, setups are...
Don't work.
Yeah, usually red flags, so... But she pushed and pushed, and then
she showed me a picture of her, and then I was in.
You were all in.
Yeah. Then we went on a date, and we were pretty much just close right after that, and got married pretty quick, pretty young, too young to realize what we were getting into. But it turned out to be an awesome decision. Yeah. So we kind of spent the first few years doing the college student thing. And we were married for like almost 5 years. And we were kind of in the phase of life where we just wanted to go, go, go. Like, we didn't have everything figured out. We weren't super settled down. But he was working full time still, trying to get into grad school. And I was just doing online classes. And we had two little girls. And at that point, too, we were, like, big into service projects and stuff. I think for me, being home with the kids, that was, like, my outlet. And so, yeah. You want us to roll into the full story, or?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, you can tell everybody what you study and stuff, but that's probably a little bit part of your story.
Yeah. Also, I guess, right? He could give you some of his background.
I think Mark's pretty smart, right?
He's a genius.
A devil.
He's so lighthearted, you wouldn't like assume he's probably the smartest one in the room. But
in Utah, I went to BYU. I was studying neuroscience. Was planning on going to PA school, become a PA. I graduated and I was working as on the ambulance and on the fire department. So I was truck captain in the fire department and over
Wow.
in and on the ambulance. So it was fun. Also was working in the ER or the OR, sorry. Working in the OR, getting a lot of experience to try to get to PA school, to grad school, because it's important. But yeah, it was mostly just medical everything. We tried to do a lot of service things medically, help with those hours, and but yeah.
It was like a busy time in life, and I think at every portion of life you have that stage where you're like, oh, it's so busy. Remember when we thought we were busy before, but this is like actually busy?
Yeah.
Remember when we felt like there was so much to do? And we had just finished like a blood drive service project thing, and we were going to bed, and I remember we had a conversation, and I was like, you know, like I know everybody has to go through hard things. I know that's just part of life, but do you think maybe if we like choose our difficult things like intentionally, maybe we can skip out on like
The rough
the
things.
really rough things that we feel like we don't have control over? I was like, wait, I'm just gonna do that. I'm just gonna choose these intentionally difficult things, and I'm just gonna see if that like gives us the get out of jail free card. And
It was working.
yeah, it felt good, you know, like. I think I said, I wonder if we can just piggyback off of other people's trials, and if we can show it for them, if we can just almost like sneak past our own. So that was my plan, but obviously it didn't go that way. It was a short time after that. We had our two daughters. We had a 3-year-old, and we had a 1.5-year-old daughter, and it was just like a normal morning. I had gotten breakfast, I was answering some work emails, and I went to go wake up our 1.5-year-old daughter, Emery. And so me and her sister went in her room, and she just woke up crying but frantic. And it was like right away, obviously something was wrong. She was paralyzed on half of her body, was just completely paralyzed. And so obviously I panicked, and I immediately called for help, called Mark, and basically just told him like Emery can't move the right side of her body. And while I was waiting, I remember kind of having that thought again of like, this doesn't happen to us. This stuff doesn't happen to us. This doesn't happen to, you know, you think like stroke or something, like what's going on? And so for me, like the first thing I did, I carried her out of her room and I made some calls, and then I just dropped down and my knees, and I just prayed. I just prayed like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not gonna panic yet. Just let everything be okay. And I remember like it was like an immediate, distinct feeling of like everything would be okay. And so even though there was a lot of pressure in it, you know, it's all happening so fast, that was like a very, very intense and distinctive moment that I held on to for everything we went through coming up next, was that moment on my knees where I felt like God told me everything would be okay. And yeah, and it basically just went downhill from there. But
When she called me, I was just at work. I was working at a nutraceutical company. We make supplements. So at the time, I was being a formulator, formulating good products for people. She called me, raced home, and we picked up the Ashley and the girls, and we ran to the ER down in Provo, and started running tests. And at first they thought it was just like a broken arm, and I'm like, there's no way it's a broken arm. She just woke up like this. And you could kind of see when they were wheeling us down. So this was actually COVID times, so only one of us could be, this was 2020, only one of us could be in the hospital with her at a time. So I was I guess the first one.
She was the daddy's girl.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like, I mean, obviously, He had a lot more extensive medical experience than I did, and not that.
She would have done great, but I really wanted to be there too.
Yeah,
So,
I could totally understand that.
I felt content with her being with him. So,
yeah, we
During
were.
all of this, though, too, like on the way to the hospital and everything, was she still pretty frantic, or had she calmed down at all, really?
Not really. You could tell she was like her movement would come and go. And so we were kind of like, it was like the toss up of who can get to the hospital. She's breathing and that was all fine. So
She couldn't like hold up her head though, because like half of her neck was working. So Ashley just held her.
it was kind of like the toss up of wait for the ambulance, or we just called our pediatrician on the way in and said we're rushing in. So
Yeah. But she was, I can't really remember actually. If she, I don't think she was frantic. I think that the initial waking up was freaking her out. She was, I wasn't there obviously, but I think by the time I got there, she had kind of calmed down, but she still couldn't hold up her, like half of her body was limp and her neck only half of it was working, so she
So
couldn't
it
hold it.
was just obvious, like whatever it was that was wrong was a big deal. So they did lots of tests, like everything was inconclusive. They did a CT scan, no tumors.
Yeah, that was
And so
that
that was
should be
like a
something.
huge relief. And then it was actually Mark that noticed like her eyes were doing this twitchy thing. And so they figured out she was having seizures. And so that was the first answer. They're like, okay, she's having seizures. That's.
Which honestly, that was like a almost a relief, because like postictal state of a seizure is like sometimes paralysis. So I was like, oh, maybe it's just a mini stroke. We can figure that out.
Yeah, or something.
But then we did an MRI and they found a big tumor. And that's when the ER doc is like, okay, this isn't allowed right now, but you can call in your wife. And I'm like, whoa.
So they'd done the CT scan and they were like, and that was the no tumors confirmation, which was awesome. Then they did it, the MRI, and Mark called me and he was like, hey, they said you can come back. And for me, like, I'd been waiting outside for hours at this point with our little girl, our oldest Harley. And like, that was kind of like when my heart sunk because they were so adamant on that no, both parents can't be there rule that I was like,
And this was like peak of, this was like peak COVID times. It's like you follow the rules. You take that mask off, you're going to jail.
So I knew whatever it wasn't good news. And when I went in, the doctor had stepped out and it was just Mark. And so I walked in and he basically just looked at me and he said she has a tumor.
Yeah, when the doctor brought it up to come talk to me, holding Emery, he pulled it up on the screen, and he said, "I do not have good news for you." And it was rough. He pulled up the screen and he's like, "She has a golf ball sized tumor."
But even like right from the beginning, it was obvious. And we got to experience that a lot, but it was so obvious how I think coordinated God is in our lives. I mean, I've never really believed in coincidences, but it was like time and time again through those experiences, there was testament of that. Even our nurse, that first day, our nurse in the ER came in and she said, just as like a personal note, obviously they don't know what it is or what's going on, but I want you to know, like I've seen this personally, and what you guys are about to experience is going to be a rough road and it's going to be hard, but you're not alone. And so she actually gave us her personal cell. She was like, reach out, call. This is not an easy road that you're about to go down.
I was kind of thinking about it, like speaking of the past experiences of like miracle after miracle. I grew up in a gigantic family in Wyoming. There were 12 kids, and we all almost died sometime in our life. And so I was used to seeing miracles. It was like a normal thing. Something would happen and we'd all get on our knees and say, "I don't know how you're gonna fix this, but good luck, God. Help me be okay." And it all worked out. That's kind of what we did, is we knew it was just gonna work out. Like, fell on our knees and had that feeling and that confirmation that everything is going to be okay.
And I think for me, I kind of just stayed in a state of like intentional denial that first little bit, because you're, and you know, they put you in an ambulance. There's so much going on that I'm like, okay, I can't break down here. I can't break down right now. Like, I can do that later, but I just need to like be here right now. And I mean, that kind of worked for me throughout the whole thing, is I would just have my moments, I guess. But even from the beginning, I remember from the beginning, I was like, all right, we can't control the situation. All we can do is control how we react to it and just be involved and hands-on. And so from the beginning, I was like, hey, like, this is worst case scenario. I get that. But we're just gonna have best case scenario out of the worst case scenario the whole time. And so that was kind of like my plan. I was like, whatever it is, whatever happens, we're gonna get the luck, you know. We're gonna have luck the whole time. It's gonna be, you know, smooth sailing for us, I guess, as smooth as it could be for a situation like that. And that was kind of my intention going into it. And it was absolutely the opposite every single time. Like, any horrible side effect that could happen did happen. So right from the beginning, she ended up having
So we took her. So at the Provo Hospital, they found the tumor and they're like, okay, we're gonna ship you up. Ashley got in the ambulance with Emery and they took us up to Primary Children's. And that's where they admitted us, did another MRI just to confirm and confirmed it and scheduled us for surgery the next day. And went from there. That was so they did surgery. It was two surgeries to take the brain tumor out. It was 11-hour surgery and then a 2-hour surgery, so 13 in all. But they got the tumor out and then they sent it off for testing. And we're like, okay, bad thing happened. It's not going to be cancerous. Like, it's going to be good news. It's all right. We'll take that. Everything's going to be okay. So they sent it off and they said about a week later, then. So we went back to our normal life. Emery could, she was on a anti-nausea medication. So she kind of just went back to normal, other than a huge scar in her head. And half, yeah, half shaved head. But like she was kind of acting normal. I went back to work. We were like, this is just going to be a normal tumor. Then they called and they're like, okay, we need to bring you in. And they told us that it was a infantile glioblastoma. And of course, right then you just got to start Googling.
Yeah.
About the, don't Google it.
They basically defined it as, yeah, they just said it's aggressive brain cancer, so you're gonna need to go back quick. So she started with, yeah, we go in, we met with her doctor, and it wasn't optimistic. So the kind of cancer she had was, it's essentially like, for adults, it's terminal. There's no cure. It's pretty quick. There's no.
It's like 2 years with or without treatments, like best case.
Yeah.
So.
So she kind of came in with a, I'll give it to you straight, it doesn't look good, but she's young, and you know, these treatments work better on, the younger you are, the better. So she has that to her advantage. So we walked out with like 50-50. She was like, we're gonna give you a 50-50.
It's like 50-50 chance. The good news is we have a plan. Bad news is it's something brand new. We've never tried it before. Because
Oh my
the
word.
last 22 years we haven't had any luck. We're like, wow, nice.
Wow.
So yeah, so straight from the beginning, she ended up going through five really aggressive rounds of chemo. And it was, I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong. Multiple ports, everything was getting infected. And when you're like in the moment too, when you don't have like a medical needy kid, or you're on the outside of those situations, you kind of look at it and you think like, well, that's a lot to deal with. Like, I would hate to deal with that. But you just assume that people in those situations just learn to deal with it. And even in the hospital, some of the nurses would remind us, like, it's okay. Like, you'll get your new normal, you'll get your rhythm. And I remember thinking, like, I don't want this to ever feel normal. Like, none of this is normal. And you go through like different things, but we had so much support. I mean, so much support from family, from friends, from people we had never met. And so I think that part of it was really, really cool to experience the moment, especially because we were young. I was 25. I was pregnant with our third kid at the time.
Oh, my word.
And I just remember being like, I'm just a baby. I'm already too young to have three kids. I am too young to have three kids.
I guess we should have said this at the very beginning. When we met, we were young. She was 18. I was 22. And got married. She was 19. I was 23. We were little babies.
Yeah. And I think that's just like the part of parenthood you jump into. Like, you know bad things can happen. But you don't think about that. Like, you think about all the good things and you think about all the blessings and the just like the purpose of life. Like, that's the purpose of life, is having kids and watching them grow and going, like, there's always hard things, going through the hard things. But until you're in your own trial and there's no way out, like, you don't have an option, that's kind of when you have, at least for me, that was when I had my heart to heart with my Savior, of like, look, I'm here, I want to be here fully, you told me it was going to be okay, so I will do everything I can on my end to make that happen. And so we were both, and luckily we had a lot of support, we had family that would come stay and help with our other little girl. Mm-hmm. And that was like the game plan, was like, she's going to be okay, so we're just going to do everything in our power to make sure that happens. Like, that was the confirmation that we had.
And there's that phrase that experiences can make you better or bitter. Your experiences are going to happen, so it's up to you to let it do what you want to it. Mm-hmm. You want to, whatever. So, are you going to let it make you into a bad person and like hate the world and hate everything, or you can let it open your eyes and go that other route? And so that's kind of what we had in our mind, that like, we're not going to become these angry people that ruin our kids' lives by having such a bad attitude.
I had bad attitudes, so I'm familiar.
No, you think it a lot. But, like, you gotta feel it.
I think it's the mama bear in us, you know. We think about all the things, and yeah, it's a good thing that these guys keep us, you know, in line.
Well, we all have those moments. It's part of being human. But like you said, if overall you can understand that, okay, I had my moment, I'm still putting my faith in God, I'm still going to show up for these other people that need me, right? But yeah, it's totally okay to have a moment every once in a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And talking about the support we had, it was crazy. Like, the fire department I was on, they did this huge fundraiser in the Spanish Fork City. Mm-hmm. They gave us this huge, they pretty much paid for our utilities for a year.
Yeah, it was.
And did this huge, like, so many fundraisers just to help us out financially. People were there to help watch our girls.
Yeah,
family come.
It was crazy. And I think it was crazy to be on that side of it, because I had talked before how, maybe we can just do all these things and skip out on those trials. And so it was humbling, you know. We were young. We were still figuring out careers and school and all of that. But I think in those moments, you're just kind of like, you're more willing to accept help because you are kind of at the bare minimum. And for me, it was cool to see how God will truly meet you wherever you at. Like I mentioned, I had moments I was bitter and I questioned it. And I remember laying in the hospital bed with her and being woken up for vitals and all this stuff. And I just remember being like, I'm grateful we're here and close to a hospital and have modern medicine, but this just feels like prison. Like, you can't leave the unit. I would walk to the window. They had this big window at the end of the cancer unit. And I remember just like staring outside being like, this is so crazy how much I took for granted before this moment. Like, I would give anything just to go outside and feel the sun on my face and deal with all the other problems that we had before this.
Even just to deal with the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, COVID.
But it was really cool to see that, like, God really will meet you where you're at. And I felt like I was allowed to feel that way. Like, I was allowed to feel angry or sad or bitter, but I knew I didn't want to stay there. And that was definitely like a spiritual, you know, your rebound gets faster and faster. So when you go through those moments, it was like it got easier and easier to rebound from all that, because especially in like the thick of the really bad parts, I was like, I'm not going to waste my energy being mad at this situation or that situation. I'm just going to communicate with her team and do my best to like make her as happy as I can, because she hated it.
Oh,
she was, oh, they called her Sour Patch and Tornado.
They would have like dressing changes or something happen, and they needed to like, they're like, oh, we'll bring in a nurse to do it and a nurse to hold her. But it was like known that for Emery, you needed 5 nurses minimum.
Yeah.
She was like,
she's a fighter.
And then, just to give you a little bit more info too, that like during COVID only one of us was in the hospital, and so we kind of broke it out. So I'd go to work. I had we had family that would stay at our house and be with Harley, because she wasn't in school yet. That's our oldest. Be with her, and I would go to work Monday to Thursday, and then Thursday night I would go up to the hospital and switch Ashley. But Emery, hating the hospital and hating everything about it, like, two of us couldn't be at the hospital, in the hospital at the same time. So she had to, like, run down, being 8 months pregnant,
oh,
huge belly.
Lord.
She's a tiny lady with this huge belly, running down. And I'd
like, high five in the hallway.
Yeah. And I run up there. By the time I get up there, she's got, like, 3 nurses just holding her so she doesn't rip all her cords out. And that was how we went week from week.
And I think you, like, for people that have a relationship with God, you hear stories of miracles and you hear, you know, tender mercies throughout the whole thing. We definitely had those. But I think it's something that you have to choose to see too, because it really could have gone either way. So on her board in her room, one of the quotes that I kept up off and on was one by Emerson. Now, to different minds, the same world is both a heaven and a hell. And I feel like that's where we were like, if we choose to see this as pure hell, there is every validating reason for it to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
If we choose to see God's hand in this, there is even more validating reasons to see it that way. And I think one thing that I learned too, at least for me, like a belief that I feel like I held dear, was you think of trials and you think of like these things that happen to you. And I had kind of always had the perception of, you know, oh, God gave you this trial. God wants us to grow, so he gives us trials. For me, and it could have just been because it was so horrendous going through it, I felt like I didn't believe that. I was like, there's no way that God would give my child this trial. There's no way he would give her this cancer and watch her be tormented over and over, because I mean, to her, that's what the medical treatments were. She didn't understand it.
They would come in and they had to, like, she couldn't even sleep. And so they'd come in and she couldn't do the blood pressure cuffs, cause it would squeeze her arms, and being on chemo, everything hurts just a touch, and having it like squeeze her arms, she hated. And she's a year and a half old, almost 2. So everything hurt. And so her being tortured was like for real. And they'd come in, they're like, well, she's has this infection. We got to start another line. So she has another IV. She has like 12 IVs all over her body. She's walking around with like tubes going everywhere. Like, she looks like a tortured person.
Yeah. And I think you learn to respect other, I guess you learn to understand other people's spiritual beliefs that they hold dear. Because I feel like mine definitely shifted in like your greatest moments of suffering. It's like everything you believe is stripped away and you have to actually decide like what pieces actually resonate with you and belong to you because you have no other option. Like, if you don't believe it, you can't hold on to it. And so for me, that was one of the things where I was like, you know, I don't feel like God did this to her. I feel like God allowed this to happen to her, but I don't believe this specific experience God gave to my daughter. Like, I can't see it that way. Because there was also people that spoke very negatively of the experience. Like, well, the same God that you're praying to is the same God that gave her cancer. And I felt like that was just something that didn't sit with me, where I was like, no, I think God is a perfect God and a God of organization, and I don't think he gave this to her. Do I think he allows those things to happen to us? Yeah, that's part of the human experience. But in those moments, it's like he's the person that can actually get you through that. He's the person that will be there for you, and that's what the Savior's for. Like, he's the one that understands more than anybody else. And so for me, that was kind of like everything I believe had to be like stripped down and reconstructed. And that was a belief that I held on to very dearly. It was like, no, I don't believe God gave my daughter cancer, but I do believe that he's the person that will get us through this one way or another.
Beautiful.
100%.
Yeah.
I'll talk more on that a little bit later, but
Yeah.
go ahead.
Like Ashley said, she had five of these rounds of chemo that were super aggressive. When you hear of people getting chemo and then they have to shave their head, her first round, within like 2 days, all the hair on her body fell out.
Yeah. She kept her eyelashes for a little bit,
Oh
but
yeah.
she got so much chemo, like there was no head shaving. We just kind of it
Just
like
fell
flopped
out.
out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, so with brain cancer, you have to kind of up the amount of chemo that you give the person, because that's to cross the brain blood barrier. So anyways, the high chemo, and with that came all the side effects of like nausea and like, yeah,
Yeah.
her skin falling off, all these things.
And you go into it carefully. You know, you want to read all the side effects and everything you're signing. And by her fourth treatment, she had an arm infection. And it was just like the whole run around. And by the time they came in to do surgery, it was like, okay, what am I signing? And they're like, well, we'll try to keep her arm, but we might take her arm off. Like, you know, it
Oh,
just becomes like
trying to keep her alive.
casual conversation. And it's just one of those things where you get good at putting on a face. But inside, I remember expressing to Mark being like, I feel like I know they're here to like help her, and I'm grateful for that. But I just feel like my baby is being butchered, like week after week, a new surgery, a new scar. And that was something that changed for me throughout the thing. I remember in the beginning, it felt like she was being butchered every time. And I just remember thinking, like, another tally to the tormentor, like another scar. And that perspective for me kind of started to change towards the end, when like you looked at her and you could see all these scars and everything that she'd been through. And it was horrible, but it was also inspiring to see like how much a child can go through and still fight and still punch your doctors in the face and still have that resilience. And it's really inspiring as an adult. I feel like sometimes we're quick to give up when we don't know what's going on, or we don't know what to do. But it was inspiring to see her resilience all the way up to the last. Her last treatment was definitely like the big.
Yeah, her last one was so she had five rounds of chemo, and then the sixth round was a huge round of chemo, which was just gonna wipe out her whole immune system,
Her bone marrow.
and then bring her back with her bone marrow transplant. So it was and then like.
And they call it like an auto transplant. So they actually took all her stem cells prior to chemo. And then on that last one, they said, we're not killing her bone marrow on purpose, but her bone marrow is going to die off too. So she'll need a bone marrow transplant. But she gets to be her own donor. So that was
And
kind of cool.
so like it's all talking what Ashley said, like you just get used to these phrases that sound like crazy. But they're like, yeah, the risk is high, but like the rate of engrafting with your own bone marrow is a little bit is higher than if you're getting somebody else's bone marrow.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this is not a 100% thing. You're getting your own blood back.
Yeah.
to still risk? What the crap? Oh, we're just going for this, like actually killing her and then trying to bring her back, hopefully.
Oh, my goodness.
There was, so before that bone marrow transplant, they bring you in for, like, the special meeting because the side effects are so sensitive. They bring you in for this hour-long meeting where they go over the side effects. And
it's legit, like, just listing the side effects, every side effect. It's like, all right, she's not going to, yeah.
Yeah. And we got to the one where they're going through, and we have to sign a paper that basically says we consent to this chemo that will render her infertile. It will destroy her ovaries. And so I remember asking, like, is this like a for sure thing? What are the odds or whatever? And they, which is a good thing. They were very straightforward. They were like, after this bone marrow transplant, she will not have children. And when you're that deep into something that intense and that kind of brain cancer, you're like, your finish line, your end goal in a trial like that is like, just get through this trial. And then you'll worry about everything else. Mm-hmm. And so it was definitely hard for me to sign that because we also had our third daughter. In the midst of all that, we had our third daughter.
Yeah, we had COVID times. My mom came and stayed with Emery in the hospital. This was after the surgery where they had called us and they're like, hey, we're gonna have to take her arm, can you sign this real quick? I was like, oh shoot. And there, it was just her arm. She had a fungal infection, so they just went into surgery, take a huge chunk out. If they didn't, they'd test it. If they didn't get all, they could take some more, test it. And they didn't have to take her arm, which was cool. But after this surgery, the baby decided she was ready to come. It was just perfect timing.
Yeah. She had her arm stuff. And I remember too, and that's one thing I truly believe that we are created in God's image. And so for me, I was like, hey, we're created in his image and he created us. Aren't we creators? Like, isn't that the whole point of being human, is to have purpose and have meaning? And so that was one thing that I felt very strongly, was like, no, if God created us in his image and he can move the mountains and the heavens and the earth, like, we can petition him. We can petition him. Like, he has a plan, and I know that. But I feel like he wants us to be part of the decision making in that plan. Mm-hmm. And so when we would go through those, like, extreme things, I remember thinking, like, all right, we don't know the outcome. God knows the outcome. We don't know the outcome. All I know is I want to have a say, and I want to have the thing. And so I felt like that was like an ongoing thing for me, is I developed a pattern of, yeah, petitioning Heavenly Father for more, for being like, okay, this sucks. Here we go, another thing. But can we change it? Even though they're saying this, can it maybe be like that? And that's kind of how it was. Like, she would have the worst side effects with, you know, this horrible, we might take her arm, we might have to do this, we might have to do that. And in like the nick of time, every time, she would pull it off. And so we went into that last bone marrow transplant, and it was like a heavy feeling.
Well, before, you should talk about having the baby too. One of the petitions was, okay, she's going to have the baby, but one of your petitions was like, okay, I need to wait a week.
Yeah, I mean, like, I want...
because she's going into surgery and you're due. And she's petitioning. He's like, I need to wait a little bit. And so she went.
So I was like, I'm just going to hold out for as long as I possibly can. And we did.
We come had, out. She let
our third girl.
She waited.
Yeah. She was like 9 days late. So,
which is weird for us. But
his mom got to Emery. My mom got to Harley. And we met.
We went on a date.
Yeah. We went to the hospital, had a baby, swung around, he dropped me off, and then went back up to Emery. Yeah. And it seems like, from the outside looking in, it seems like some of those situations would be miserable. But I remember that was just like a euphoric, happy moment. Like, that was really just a silver lining where it's not ideal, but it goes back to like, all right, are you going to choose the heaven or the hell in this situation? We have this new, healthy baby, everything's going good. Let's just get this last round of chemo out of the way. This one's gonna be good. Everything else has been a nightmare. This last round is gonna go good, and we're gonna be done, and we're gonna put this behind us.
Oh, we were. The cool thing was, and I should have realized it, but this last round of chemo, they actually let both of us be in the hospital the whole time, which I should have seen it coming. that this is not good for her. But we were just like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. Like, heck yeah. Party, we'll keep her happy. We'll play.
Blast some music. Like, sorry to everybody else on the floor. We are going to party. This is going to be a great experience.
We did. So she had her last round. She had her second birthday 2 days after she got her bone marrow transplant. And it was not a good time. By that point, she was so sick. So sick.
Like, she didn't want to, like, she was pretty much laying on me all the time, and blood was just coming out of her mouth because her mouth was, and insides,
like mouth sores, yeah.
And her insides were just, like, falling apart and coming out her mouth slowly. And so she is just in so much pain. Can't really sit up at all. So we're just holding her, and then the nursing staff came in and brought presents on her birthday, like, hey, this is a happy thing. We're like, thank you so much. We hate this, but this is so nice. Thank you, thank you.
But it was relieving because for me, I kept going back to that. No, God told me everything was going to be okay. This sucks, but this is like the final stretch. And I know it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so it was around that time. There was one night, like, she was just miserable. We were doing everything to cheer her up. But she had kind of perked up a little bit. And we were sitting on her bed. And she started, like, waving at the ceiling. And we were kind of being like, all right, like, she's not doped up on anything besides Tylenol.
And painful drugs. Like, painful drugs meaning not the ones that make you feel better, but the ones that are actually killing you. Yeah.
And she just kind of started, like, talking to, like, someone up at the ceiling. And she's waving at him. I'm like, Mark, are you watching this? And this went on for, like, 20 minutes. Like, she would get distracted, and then whoever it was, she would talk to him again, and she'd wave, and she would, like, introduce, like, Dad, Mom.
And she'd, like, it looked like she was grabbing things.
Yeah, and she would, like, grab and, like, put her hands on her head.
And then fold her arms.
Yeah. So this whole time I'm thinking, like, this is awesome. This is such a good, it was. I felt like this was, like, the most spiritual experience I had had in that moment up to that point. And, like, this huge sense of relief because I was like, no, like, there are angels with this. There are people here. And we had lost both our grandmas, like, that within that year, too.
So right before, yeah, getting into this, right before Emery was diagnosed, Ashley's grandma passed away. Like, a week later, she woke up half paralyzed, and that started. And then right before bone marrow transplant, my grandma passed away. And so we felt like this was, they were getting called to the other side of the veil to really help her out. It was cool because you could like feel them with you.
Yeah. So that experience of her talking to angels in front of us was awesome. And I felt like this is it. Like, this is the moment. They've come. They've taken anything that's left. They've taken it. And she's healed. And she's going to go through this bone marrow transplant. And I felt like we had made it. And so it was really hard because it was a few days after that experience that she coded, and they took her from the cancer unit and they rushed her down to the PICU and they hooked her up to life support.
So they, it started off intense and then it just got more and more and more intense. So she was on a ventilator. So what happened is her insides were, like, legit falling apart, but they weren't coming all the way out. They were falling into her lungs. And so her lungs were going into failure. And what brought us down there was respiratory failure because she couldn't breathe because pieces of her body were stuck in her lung. And so, it went down to the PICU. She was on a nasal cannula and then pressurized air and then right to the ventilator. And it was hard to see. And then day after day, we were like, she kept getting more and more things fail. So first it was her respiratory system, and then it was her kidneys, and then it was her liver. And then her heart started to fail, and she had to have emergency surgery to be hooked up to the most aggressive type of life support called VA ECMO. which is a machine that replaces your heart and your lungs. Which is kind of a, it's like a, usually a thing that they hooked people up to if they're doing a heart transplant or heart surgery, and they put them on for a couple hours.
It's like a temporary life support,
Yeah.
which they made that clear too. The day she got hooked up to VA ECMO, it was kind of like that first day where they wouldn't let us both in the PICU. And so we're going back and forth and things are going crazy and we're panicking. And so I was out in the waiting room while it was really intense and Mark's updating me. And I'm just at that point trying to keep it together. But they were very clear too. Even before then, they had had the conversation. One of the doctors, she basically just asked, she's like, "All right, it's not looking good. She still has to go through the rest of her transplant. She hasn't even gotten to the difficult part of her transplant yet. What do you want the end of your child's life to look like? How far are you willing to go?" And I was like, "Thank you, I appreciate it, but we've come too far. We're going to do everything we can." And so the day she got hooked up to ECMO, like I think that was the point that like I actually broke, where I actually started to wonder, like, is it going to be okay? Like, did I just make that up in my head? Was that really God that told me it was going to be okay? And so I was just like sobbing on my knees, praying in the waiting room when a social worker came and she asked me, she was like, are you praying?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Does that give you comfort?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "All right, well, we are going to let you back there. Only one person's allowed in the PICU, but this is a potential end of life, and two people are allowed for that." And so they took me back, and we were able to stand there while she got the surgery, which I think a lot of parents don't get to experience, and I think a lot of people wouldn't want to.
And she wasn't stable enough to go to the operating room, so they
Yep.
had to do it. She was in the biggest room in the PICU in the corner, and they put us there right at the beginning because they knew that there was going to be a lot of things that happened. So she had many, many bedside surgeries in this PICU, and this was a very, very like invasive. So they pretty much take your carotid artery and sear one side of it, the one that's going up to your brain, and the other one, they put this huge cannula down to get to your heart to take the blood out. And that was the surgery they were doing just bedside. And they tried to clean it, but like this was emergency, you had to do it right then. And so they tried to make it as clean as they could, but.
Yeah, I mean, it was intense. There was a nurse running back and forth for parts, and I remember the surgeon was just like, I mean, it was like a movie scene. He's just throwing like bloody rag after bloody rag, and he just kept saying, "It's not working, it's not working, it's not working."
Like saying, get a new part, and somebody's running
Yeah.
out of the OR, makeshift OR, out of the ER or PICU, trying to get some device that would actually fit because they didn't have any of the right
Yeah.
pieces at the time.
And it felt like I had always had, even in the low parts, I had always had like some amount of faith. But for me, that was like the lowest point. You know, when you're watching him throw these bloody rags off your daughter and then he's saying it's not working. And that was like the moment of my weakest moment where I thought, why would God put her through all that stuff and then take her now? Like take her here at the very end of it. Like, what is the purpose? Why now? Why would she have to go this way? Why would you make her suffer all the way to this point and then take her? And I did. I stayed in that like questioning for at least a few hours. Then it ended up being successful. He got the VA ECMO in, but it was like this just heavy cloud of gloom where her whole medicals, everybody knew it didn't look good, and they would kind of say it, but you kind of just felt like,
And they're pretty much the vibe of the room was, okay, hopefully this lasts a couple hours so that these parents can like
say
have
goodbye.
time, yeah, the end of life care talk, not too many more times before they actually take it and let her die.
Yeah.
So
It was a hard day, but I think by the end of that day, we were talking, and that's where I kind of admitted to Mark where I was like, "I don't know how to feel right now. I was told she'd be okay, and she's not okay, and I don't know what to do." And Mark told me, he said, "There's two ways that I'm going to come out of this, either closer to God or not. And I know which way I want it to be." And so rather than sit in self-pity, for me, that was kind of when I had the point too, where I said, I'm going to stay the course and have faith to what I believe. I believe she was going to be okay. And if I'm wrong, if she dies, would it really have made me feel any better if I admitted that before she died? Like, it's going to suck no matter what. So I may as well just hold out until that point. So I didn't. I switched my attitude and I went back to, nope, it's going to all be okay.
Yeah.
And so her, yeah, it was pretty gloomy.
And it was like, that was like, yeah, that was the depth of like.
That was the bottom of hell, at least for me. That was.
So it really got bad. VA ECMO, not supposed to be on for a long time. And then how many days?
She was on it for 19 and a half days.
On this like crazy type of life support. But she got so swollen because her liver and kidneys were failed, not working. So she didn't make any urine.
So she was on full 24/7 dialysis too.
Yeah, dialysis and ECMO and of course on a ventilator.
So, yeah, I guess towards the end, she basically got to the point where she had two cannulas in her neck. She had 18 different cords or IVs throughout the rest of her body. And it got to the point where they were like, okay, we have to, like, she can't stay on ECMO. She's.
Yeah, we have to trial her off because it's failing. Like, her heart's not going to be able to come back. Like, this is a 12-hour at most type of thing. So.
And her machine was, like, calling him. So they pretty much just say, like, it's kind of like now or never.
Yeah, get her off the
seat. And so for us, it was, I think we were in a better state. I was in a better state spiritually, yeah. Mentally. And so I was like, all right, let's do it. Like, if there's a chance she's good, let's do it. So they
tried it and it didn't work. And they trialed it again and it didn't work. And it's like, you try it and then you have to wait, let her body recover. And then the next day you try it again. And then the third day they're like, okay, this is legit, this is her last try. This is it. If it doesn't work, I'm sorry. Like, but this is it for her. And so they trialed it and it worked perfectly. She came off and it worked great.
Yep. So she came off ECMO on December 4th and then lots of things after that, but she was released from the PICU on Christmas Eve. Yep. And she went back up to the cancer unit.
And that's where she gets, like, fully functional. They told us that she would be brain dead because ECMO doesn't stop all the clots going to your brain. So they're like, she'll be a vegetable, but at least her heart's beating.
There was a risk. And I remember thinking that, too. I remember being like, even if her quality of life is different, I still want to try.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, we had some amazing, amazing nurses. And so I was kind of sobbing about that one day. Like, even if she has issues, like, I want to give her a chance. Mm-hmm. I was like, it might not be the same. And then one of the nurses was like, you know, but maybe it will. Maybe it will. And so we had little glimmers of hope like that, too. So she left the PICU on Christmas Eve, and then she got to ring the cancer-free bell and come home on New Year's Eve.
Oh, my God.
And it's just been, like, ever since.
It was crazy. There are people that are, like, doctors that don't even believe it, and there were a lot of people that were just doctors that flew in to meet the Christmas miracle at our checkups.
Because
they like didn't believe it. They're like, wow, I had to meet her. Like, she is the miracle, the Christmas miracle of 2020, of 2020.
Oh my goodness.
So it was pretty cool.
That is incredible. And if you guys are okay with it, we'll post a video of her and how active and stuff she is.
Oh yeah.
At the end of
this. And she is like our...
She remembers everything.
Yeah, full throttle, hold you to your word, still tornado Sour Patch Kid. So
her life is like everything all in.
Yeah. She really is. She just made the competitive gymnastics team.
Jeez.
And she took second place at a wrestling tournament.
Yeah. She did the Spartan race with her sisters.
She is phenomenal. Oh my
gosh.
So.
I just think that it's just remarkable, and your relationship with our Savior, and I've never heard it in that way. And I just think that, like, because you guys were so strong together, and I know it was such a struggle, but because you guys were so strong together, like, she has life. You know, how easy it would have been to just give up and just say, you know, like, I don't want her to suffer anymore or whatever. But man, it just gives so much hope.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And I wanted to talk really quick on what you had said, Ashley, about God not giving her cancer. And I fully believe that also. The God that I know never punishes me, right? He never is looking to punish his children. He's only looking to bless us. But because of life and because of the world that we live in, there are natural consequences. And I believe, of course, that God can do all things, but I also know that there, in a sense, there are eternal laws that he has to follow also. And because of the promise of free will, right? And a part of that is natural free will, if you will. And that can be a really hard thing to understand. But if that's true, then it really is true that he isn't looking to punish us, right? Or we don't, there aren't certain things that, there's not a single 1.5 year old out there that it's necessary for their development or for their eternal progression to have to go through a brain tumor and cancer. That's just not, it's not necessary for any child, any human being to have to do that. But he's been able to take that terrible tragedy, and not only terrible for her, but terrible for you as parents and other people that loved her and was sitting there watching her have to suffer. It was difficult for all of you, right? Like, seemingly impossible. We're sitting here, our listeners are sitting at home listening to this, multiple times have wondered and thought, there's no way I could do that. I couldn't watch my child suffer like that. And you also mentioned that before too, that yeah, you don't think that you can until you're in that situation, right? And again, or also, this all makes me think of our Savior and Easter. We just experienced Easter and the atonement. And we don't, as human beings or as Christians, people who fully know and believe that Jesus is the Christ, we don't really completely understand the atonement until we need it in our lives, until we really go through things and we really have to lean on him and really just give everything to him. That's when we really understand the atonement. But for most of my life, the atonement is something I took for granted, right? Mm-hmm. Until we really needed it. And that's so much of what you were talking about too. You can either look at things this way or you look at them this way. You either give everything to the Savior and let him do what he has promised, or we don't give it to him and we bear it all ourselves. But it is up to us. And you guys are inspiring. And
well, thank you.
Emery is inspiring. And it's just beautiful. And just so grateful that you guys took the time to share her with us.
Yeah. Well, and like I mentioned earlier too, like, I don't believe in coincidences. So I feel like, I don't know, like, getting some insight from you guys where you've been through that journey of infertility. Because for me, like, as a mom, like, I got to experience that. And so when I watch her, like, playing with her sisters and playing mom and playing house and, you know, like, putting a doll in her belly and talking about being a mother, that's probably the most significant thing that I've struggled with since then. Is knowing, like, that's not something that she will likely experience. Like, yeah, there are still miracles and medicine and things can change, but being willing to accept the fact that's most likely not something she'll get to experience. I think that I was curious on your guys's experience or insight on how, I don't know, how you think we could manage that as parents when that time comes in her life, because you've experienced something similar.
Do you want to talk on that, babe?
I think just, I kind of look at it the same way as I look at like what we are telling our children that are adopted, right? Like the more honest that you can be and upfront, right? You're preparing her right now, and the less hard it will be later, right? And I think, I mean, it's so different in our situation. I mean, I didn't have to grow up thinking that I never would. But I think that just having that knowledge and that there are other options and there are beautiful children that need a mom and a dad. And, you know, I mean, our children are literally like spitting image of us, right? Like, talk about
miracle. Yeah, I noticed that. Like, yeah, I saw that.
It's really insane. And I truly feel like I gave birth to them. Like, I can't imagine another world without them, you know? And I know I don't have the best answers for you, but I just think that preparing her and just talking to her about it and not making it, you know, not a big deal, because it is, but because she'll go through those emotions later on in life. But I just think that you guys are going to be her rock right now, and there's just, yeah, other ways.
If you would have asked me 15, 20 years ago, what would be one of the hardest things that you can imagine going through? I remember multiple times I had this thought, and it was to not be able to have kids. And 20 years later, that's not true anymore. You know, we went through that, and yes, super difficult at the time, and it's still hard, right? There are still little things that we mourn in dealing with infertility, but we just put a video out a couple weeks ago about if there was a magic button that we could push that would erase all of our infertility problems, and we go back and we can have our kids, and, you know, we wouldn't push that button because we are so blessed and we just love where we're at and what we've been through.
I think it kind of goes back to the thing that you've definitely taken this crazy experience and become better because of it. And it's inspiring. It's cool to see, because there are so many people that can use your strength to keep going, to push through their issues and their hardships. Because everybody does have the hardest thing that they're gonna do in life. So yeah,
and we've talked about this before, like on the show. Like, I had a lady tell me a long time ago that, you know, she felt like we all were given a choice, like what struggle would you want to go through, you know, here on earth, and we all got to choose. And I don't know why, like, it just made me feel a little bit better, like maybe I did choose to go through this hard, you know. And it's not easy. Like today, Teague had a chiropractor appointment, and he's going through some really hard things right now. And there was a new doctor, and he said, oh, how was your birth? You know, and it was like, man, I you know, that kind of like hits you a little hard, but you learn to prepare, you know. And well, he's adopted, you know, but at the same time, it's like, my gosh, like I literally cannot imagine him with anyone else, you know, like he is mine. Like, he is a spinning image of his dad. He has the sass like me, right? Like, it's like, you could have not, you know, God created him for us. And I think that for you guys, like, talking to her and saying, like, this is what we are faced with. And there are so many kids out there that need you. And that's mm-hmm. his plan. So I don't know.
I like that. I feel like you put it in a perspective of, like, you have your children that are your children, and it doesn't matter how you get them. For now, it's kind of like, I think the only plan that I consider or enforce is, like, making sure it's normal, talking about it so that it's a normal thing. And then when time comes, we can slowly introduce the conversation more. But I guess I've never thought of it in that way where it's like, no, like, you have your children that are meant for you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of it like that, like, God already had this planned. Like, he already knew all of this, right? Like, and why do we put up such a wall? Like, why do we try and fight that plan? You know, it's like, okay, yeah, he had this plan. We have our free agency. Like you said, like, we have that choice of choosing to go with this and be happy, like, or try and find joy, or we can be miserable, right? Like, it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy, right? There are so mm-hmm. many times that I literally just cry in the bathroom, you know, when I start my period. Like,
it's, me too.
It sucks, you know, but, like, at the same time, I would not change it for the world, because that was what he needed me to be. He needed me to be their parent, right? And that was his plan. And it's a beautiful plan. And I cannot imagine it any other way.
So. Well, that's actually helpful. Like I said, that's something that hits me at the end of the day on random days. Mm-hmm.
I cannot even imagine, feeling that and having that on your plate. But give it to him, you know? He knows, and he has a perfect plan waiting for her. So,
awesome.
Well, we're not going to end with some advice. We're not going to ask you guys for some advice. You both gave great advice. Michaela just gave great advice. So we'll leave that one out, but you do have to share something that you know to be true.
I think for me, like, I know through my experiences, through watching other people's experiences, I know that God's hand is in all things. And I know that miracles really, really do still happen. And whether they're the miracles we want or not, like, they're still there. And I truly believe that choosing to accept the miracles we get is what brings us closer to Heavenly Father and is what brings more of those miracles into our lives.
Beautiful.
I'd say something that I, especially from this experience, that I can say I know is one that God is not just an idea. He's actually real. Like, he's a real person, and he made a plan for us to become like him. A lot of these hardships, it's that everybody has. They're here so that we can become like him. Like, if we came to Earth to just have a great time, yeah, that's part of it, but we wouldn't learn anything and we wouldn't be able to become like him. So I know that God is real and that he loves us so much to have this perfect plan for us to become like him. And he's there for us every step of the way. We just have to, like you said, hand it over to him. Hand it over to our Savior. He will help us. He'll walk with us. Every step of the way.
Amen.
Amen. Okay, really quick also before we go, can you guys tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing and where they can find your products and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the happy part of that story now, it's all happy. But yeah, we pretty much left that whole experience and we, like, hit the ground running and we were like, second chance at life, what are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
And because we had so much support throughout Emery's experience, we wanted to have something that helped benefit other people, like from a physical standpoint and emotional standpoint, but also like something that would give us what we needed to
give back.
Yeah, to give back, because we had received so much. And that was one of the things with Emery's experience, is I was like, we had so much support, there's no way we will ever repay anyone for how much support we had. But like, the best we can do is turn around and pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we started All In, the supplement line. And we did it as a product that Emery specifically needed after all that stuff. Her gut was wrecked. And so
her gut, and if your gut's wrecked, your immunity's gone. And so because of the industry I was in, I would make her stuff. Like, she was getting really, really, really skinny because nothing was being absorbed. And so the doctors were like, well, give her, take a capsule, break it open, try to sneak in the stuff. But I just made her drinks, and I made stuff at in the lab and bring it home so she could take it. And it would help, but kids never finish anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it morphed into what it is now. It's a pixie stick that has prebiotic, probiotic, postbiotic, all your gut support with butyrate agonist and all the things to help your immunity with vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. And really, it's kind of a symbol of kind of what we learned living after Emery came out. Our mindset kind of changed about how we looked at life, because it kind of opened our eyes to how fragile life is, but also how important it is. Like, we are here for a reason. God needs us to do things here, and we can't get in our own way. And so we made All In to help us
go back to the fundamentals, kind of.
Yeah, build the fundamentals so that we're not stuck with, like, our immunity is not sucking. So it's there to, like, build us so we have a good fundamental whatever structure. Yeah, so that you can live life to the fullest. Live life all in.
So, I love that. Can't wait.
Oh, sorry, Gwen.
No, I was just gonna say, I can't wait to order it.
Yeah. Well, we were planning on sending you guys some, but it's basically just a supplement that's meant to help your body perform at its best and help improve everything that you take, just to amplify everything that you're already doing, which, like he said, is kind of the metaphor of getting down to the fundamentals. And when you have that right, then you can expand on everything else.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So awesome. Holy cow.
Mark and Ashley, thank you guys so much for joining us. You have been a light, and we're so thankful to have met you. Go look for those angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.